Well, what does all that mean?
It means what it means. Hobie stands again to ponder his painting. Niall was lying to me? Niall really paid him what? See, this is why I didn't want you involved. This is why I was telling you stay away from him, because you can't handle this. Man, I knew you, Jack, when you cried because you found out Mary Martin was flying with strings. And you ain't changed. So leave it be. Scat. Hobie, something happened there. Someone was murdered. I've known this boy almost his entire life.
Look, I ain't gonna tell you what he said to me. I can't. Privilege holds unless he's dead, and he ain't dead.
You sure?
Pretty sure.
Hobie smacks the canvas with his brush.
Why? You afraid Edgar murdered him too?
It's crossed my mind. A rankling snuffle shoots from Hobie's nose.
You the only fucker on planet Reebok who hates Edgar worse than I do.
Maybe I've got more reason.
You know your problem with him?
I have a feeling you're about to tell me. Sock it to me, bro.
You envy him?
Say what?
Yep. I think that's what it is. See, man, I hate him for the shit he did. But you hate him for that and what he is now. You look back to all that stuff you were going through 25 years ago and you say, wow, that was exciting. That's when I was political, idealistic, committed. But I quit that nonsense. And you blame him because you think he's basically the one what forced you to give it up. Yet here he is, that dog, talking all that shit you'd still love to believe, doing it too, and you find that infuriating.
No, says Seth. I mean, yeah, I see it. And I know I still believe it. I mean, not all of it. I can't. It was a children's crusade, and some of it was childish. But I recycle my bottles. I vote for the good guys. But it's the wild hopefulness I really miss. All that time, it didn't seem there was any difference between love and justice. You could have them both. Without conflict. We were going to revise life down to the essence. We were going to abolish unhappiness. It was glorious.
Right, says Hobie. We asked the essential questions. How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a cab?
Thank you for your support.
Shit,
says Hobie. Momentarily, neither speaks. How about just a yes or a no on one thing, Hobe? Did Edgar get hardcore to off June?
Hobie's sole response is to draw his mouth down into an irked little pouch.
God damn, says Seth. You just want to be Captain Marvel.
Oh, fuck you, motherfucker. All you're doing is looking after yourself.
This is the single thing in this life I am any good at. Leastwise, that means something to anybody else.
And I'll be goddamned if I will treat it with disrespect just because you got the blues or some holy grail about some boy you looked after when he used to wet his pants. It's in the books, man. I can't tell.
They're within a few feet of one another, in poses that would look combative to an outsider, staring each other down. Seth turns away first, wandering from Hobie's room, and takes a seat on the basement stairs, picking at the metal runner. The cellar is a collection of musty smells. Glancing menacingly over his shoulder, Hobie emerges but stalks off in the opposite direction. In the darkness, beside the glimmering sheet metal venting of the furnace, Hobie rummages in the banker's boxes where the trial records are stored. Swearing in all the romance languages, he throws the top two aside to reach the herniated carton below. When he returns to Seth, he is holding a sheet of paper.
Not so fast, he says, turning the paper to his chest. Not so fast.
He sits on the step below Seth, his bulk occupying the entire space of the stairwell.
Now look, you're such a journalistic hotshot, Hobie says. Maybe you can figure this much out. See this prosecutor? What's he called? Maldo?
Malto.
I got onto him right from the start. You gotta be a PA for life, man. You gotta be an angry fella. You gotta be looking to see the right people kick the shit out of the wrong people. You gotta get off on that, day in and day out. So I'm hip, and I start running some changes on him, and pretty soon he's so sore at me, he ain't even thinking about Nile, cause he figures I'm the evilest, most deceptive bastard ever walked into a courtroom, which is just fine with me, all right? Are you going to say anything plainly?
Looky here, he says. Just listen up. Now here I am at the end of this trial, and I pull the rabbit out of the hat. State says my client brought $10,000 to this gangbanger to get him to commit murder. And lo and behold, I go and show Nile give him $10,000 cash, okay? But it was from the DFU. You remember that part?
Are you looking for applause?
You be fresh. I can just go back to painting on my picture.
Fine, I apologize. So, what's the point?
Now, if I know from day one, from before that trial starts, that skunk hardcore is lying through his gangbanging booty about what that $10,000 is and where it came from, and I do, I surely do know those things for fact, then why wouldn't I go in and say, "Now, now, Mr. Prosecutor, you done made one hell of a mistake. Here's the check. Go see the folks at DFU." Why wouldn't I do that? How does Moldo answer that question?
Because you're the evilest, most deceptive bastard that ever walked into a courtroom?
Right on. I just get my jollies pulling his chain. That's what he thinks.
And what's the truth?
You supposed to tell me.
Seth thinks.
It's a smokescreen, right? I would say you waited because you didn't want him to have time to look into this. Something about the money was wrong.
Doing good, bro. Now, I'll tell you the truth, man. There's a lot about that money, a whole lot, that's wrong, and I can't tell you but a little teeny part of it.
You didn't want Malto to ask Hardcore about it?
No. Hardcore, he had to tell the lies he told before. Jackson gave him a script. That whole thing was so Jackson, man, and Core stuck right to it. Wasn't worried about Hardcore. See, what I didn't want Malto and them to do was go out to that bank and talk to the teller who cashed that check. Cause she might tell them what all she told me.
Which was? Is that privileged too?
Not really.
So what'd she say?
She remembered Nile. She remembered him cause he acted like his usual dumbbell self. She handed him $10,000 in cash, 100 $100 bills, by the way, no 50s or 20s. And he stuck them in an overnight delivery envelope. And she says, "You shouldn't ought to do that. It says right on the form, like, don't send cash." And he says, "Nah, we've done it before." And before he leaves out, asks her his FedEx around the corner.
So he didn't give money to Core. That's the point?
No.
He did give the money to Hardcore?
I'm saying that's not the point.
Well, who'd he send the money to?
That's the point.
The paper which Hobie's been holding is a printout from microfiche. White on black, and heavy with toner, reflecting the data about a FedEx delivery last July. Nile is listed on one side of the form as the sender. On the other is the destination. Michael Frayn, RR24, Marston, Wisconsin, 53715. When Seth looks back, Hobie is studying his reaction abstractly, waiting to see how long it takes to sink in.
"April Fools?" Seth asks.
"This here's no fooling."
"It's him, right?"
"Be a funny coincidence if it wasn't."
Seth stares at the paper again. His arms feel weak.
"How long were you going to wait to tell me this?"
"Probably forever. I'm probably doing something I shouldn't as it is. Only you're breaking my heart with that hangdog shit, fucking Oliver Twist or something, waiting for more.
And this is a goddamn secret, Jack.
The judge doesn't hear word one about this. I had enough lectures from her about withholding evidence to last a lifetime."
Hobie nods.
"You forgot to ask me when I got that from FedEx."
"When?"
"Night before Nile run off. One hell of a surprise, too. I'd asked them to dig it up weeks before. I open the mail, it's like, yow."
"He hadn't told you?"
He shakes his head again, not a reply, but a sign he cannot respond.
"He couldn't have told you," Seth says.
You just said you were surprised.
Hobie merely looks, a great stone face, which in fact it is, a face that would be worthy of some sculptor's efforts.
What else did I miss? Seth asks.
Name of the town familiar?
Marston.
Is that where June lived?
Bingo.
He's been living with her?
Not so far as I can tell. But he'd been in those parts 25 years, same as her. Ran a little TV, radio, stereo kind of store since the '80s. Big chains, volume discounts finally put him out of business. Left him with some heavy debts.
Is that what the money was for?
Hobie points. Bingo again.
Apparently bankruptcy wasn't an option. Some folks didn't like the notion of a credit check on Michael or anything like that. You know, he'd sort of kept the name, case he ever ran across somebody he used to know, but he changed the spelling so he didn't step on your toes.
Remember, you had his social security number, so his must have been a phony, which meant they didn't want anybody poking around about his background. That's how I figure it. Seems he's kind of a sensitive guy anyway, not too good with stress. Had some kind of breakdown years back. He was working around there as a farmhand originally and cut off half of one foot in a threshing machine. That's like 1971. I think that's when June showed up. June and Niall. Kind of nursed him back to health.
Where the hell do you get all of this? He asks Hobie. Not from Niall, right?
Nope. Else I wouldn't be telling you. Nope. I spent quite a bit of time on the telephone starting with lunch the last day of the trial.
While you were beating the streets, I talked to the banker, realtor, chamber of commerce. Everybody liked Michael. Sweet, peaceful fella. Kind of strange. The boy we knew. I guess he stayed pretty close to my client over the years. Kind of like you and my client. Anyway, that's who I was trying to rustle up. My client. I've always figured this was where he bolted. Wanted to warn Michael his cover was blown.
That's why he took off?
Partly, I'd guess, in part. I'd say overall, strictly an estimate, not a confidence. Niall wasn't very pleased by the direction of the defense. He was ripshit with me already by the time I showed him that piece of paper. But I think this here's a secret he'd always sworn to Mom he'd keep. I'm damn sure he didn't want me to go into all of this in court. Which, of course, I'd be obliged to do if he would have let me. And then again, I think he might have worried I'd let word slip to you, too.
To me? What would I do?
Hey, dude, way I remember this one, Michael set you up big time. Only logical to think you'd want to trash him if you ever got a bead on where he was.
I never held him to blame. You know that. I'd actually like to see him.
Proust, says Hobie.
Right, says Seth. His imagination, anchored in the past, already is crawling towards some usable image of Michael. Seth has been to towns like Marston. Several years ago, he did a few columns on a girl up in Podunk, Minnesota, who wanted to play the tuba in the all-boys marching band. He spent a week out there. Everybody has strange hair. Girls with dos like woodpeckers' combs. Guys whose fathers ragged the hippies, now with greasy locks dripping to their shoulders. All of them get drunk on Friday nights and tear down the country roads, picking off the rural delivery post boxes with their bumpers. Their parents, farmers mostly, are utterly confused by the viral spread of urban life. Their kids take drugs and hang out at the malls down on the interstate, wear their seed caps backwards, and call each other motherfucker. What the hell? The adults always seem to be asking. And here, where people once thought they were the real America, Michael Frayn has remained. Seth envisions him on the main street peering discontentedly into the window of his store. An unlit neon sign, too small for the frontage it decorates, mentions a popular brand, Sony or GE. Behind it, the shop is gloomily, grimly out of business. Some disused something, two cardboard boxes, and a few stray kinks of wire are piled meaninglessly on a ledge blanketed with acrid dust, which has gathered at places into hairy wisps. The fixtures and display shelves have been removed. The man himself remains angular, still slender,
though his gut has taken on some slope. He wears a washed-out plaid shirt, with the tails hanging outside his twill trousers. He looks a bit wasted, gawky, with a knobby weight at the elbows and knees. He still has some hair, ragged but not quite as wild, not quite as bright, of course. And he would take considerable pain in stepping down into the street. To walk, Michael wheels his upper body to the left and stiffly hurls the opposite leg, an elaborate, painful-looking motion, which he has thoughtlessly mastered. Down the way, the unpainted clapboard church and corrugated farm bureau building stand beside a new brick restaurant, prefab construction from the looks of it, insubstantial as a cereal box. As he moves along, Michael's eyes, still glossy and uncertain, would flash this way and avoid Seth, as they avoid all strangers, with no hint of recognition. That's him. Seth gathers himself around the picture. And did you find him?
Which one?
Either. Niall?
Nope.
Course not. How about Michael?
Nope. That's how come I ended up talking to everybody in town. Man's just gone. Nobody could find him that day, or since.
They're together?
Doing their fugitive thing, my guess.
Michael's had practice slipping his name, his past. I figure he's showing Niall how. In the silence of the basement, the voice of one of the wrestlers, at the same pitch as an engine exhaust, rumbles across the room from the TV.
"I'll crush the mighty welder's butt,"
he declares to an interviewer. "And you're not going to tell me the rest. How we get to this point?"
"Can't, man."
"Who can?" Seth asks. "Who will?" Hobie lays his heavy hand on Seth's knee. He smells of paint. His eyes are bleary. He looks at Seth as they look at each other, with what's been imbued over a lifetime.
"You'll figure," he says.
Summer, 1995. Niall. Weak, Niall always thought when he entered the jail. The damn guards were so weak, just in a total snooze. Their whole deal was papers and forms. "Captain wants them forms to be right." Here they were, with all these bad actors and tough customers, killers and heartless slobs, 200 feet away, and the realest thing to these tools was whether every visitor put down a sign-in time and the inmate's pen number. Probation was the same way. Jesus. Niall sighed and thought about the girl. Niall was in love. He was always in love, but this was different. It was always different because he didn't love the girls other men did. He didn't think Julia Roberts was so beautiful. In high school, he wasn't like every guy who thought about boning the whole Palm Squad. He liked sweet girls, gentle girls, girls who had something special, girls who maybe some way reminded him of himself. Right now, he was really in love. Better than ever. He was like the dude in the song who loved being in love. He loved Lavinia.
"Niall, my man," said the lieutenant.
He said that each week. Niall timed it so this sphincter brain named Eddie was on the desk because he barely searched him.
"It raining out there?"
"A little," Niall said, "kind of misting."
"Shit, that damn pizza boy gets slow. Any doggone excuse. Step into my office." "Kind of misting," said Eddie, as he extended a slightly arthritic finger to the examination room. "Shit. You know, it been misting all damn month. That pollution and all's what done it. You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. Misting. Shit, I'll be having this damn cough all year."
He ran his arms along the outside of Niall's torso, inside each leg until he reached the thigh.
"Okay, you done. Which one you want?"
"Henry Downs, Slybolt."
"Mr. Slybolt, yes, sir. We're gonna tell another gangbanger this week how he got to be a good boy when we let him out. You make sure he listen up."
Eddie laughed and stamped Niall's hand. He said he'd call to have them bring Bolt down. Niall walked on. At the gatehouse, he stuck his hand under the ultraviolet, and the guards inside discharged the lock, admitting him. Niall could feel it there behind him. It reminded him of Bug. Every step, every twitch brought her to mind. She was always with him, like magic. He saw some skinny girl on the street, and he remembered her. He saw stocking caps or gray twills. He felt the package in his can. It was like a town where all the roads ran to one place. Lavinia. Girls always got Niall like that. He was always waking up and trying to remember first thing who he was in love with. His heart was always flying along, airborne with secret love. He was crazy all the time about someone who didn't even know it. There was Emmy Perez, a receptionist at Maine Probation, who had two little babies from two different men. He'd loved her secretly for a long time, with her thin little legs and her kind of attitude. There was Marjorie in his father's campaign office, who had a limp from something she'd had as a kid. There was another black girl named Namba Gates he met at college who seemed to like him, too. Niall thought she was waiting for him to ask her out, and he almost did it, until he realized he couldn't bear to. When he was a freshman in high school, there was a girl in geometry, Nancy Franz, chubby really, but kind of sweet on him. She used to bump him in the hallways and stuff, steal his books. It was 15 years later, and he still thought of her sometime. There were so many. Bug was the best. She was so sweet. That was just the word for her, was sweet. And shy. She got so she could barely stand to let those huge eyes of hers get near yours. That had to be why they called her Bug, those eyes. It drove Niall crazy when she did that. Like she wasn't even 15, but 7. "Do you suppose you'd say you were my girl?" he asked this morning when they were doing the package.
"Not to none of them, I wouldn't. No how."
"Would you say it to me?" And she got that look. She batted him on the arm.
"You psychin',"
she said.
"No, I'm not. I think you're my girl, man. That's what I think." "Well, you gonna think what you think then, ain't you? Ain't gonna matter none what I say."
And she skirted away from him, the way she did, usually. Not in person, but like her spirit. It was like a ghost, something you couldn't catch. A part of her was shy, or hidden, or something. He didn't have the words. He was inside Department 2 now, and he sighed aloud, thinking of her.
"What's got you down, man?"
asked Ronquiles, the guard at the desk.
"I'm not down," said Niall. "I'm up. I'm happy."
He lifted his arms to show he was free. Then he smiled stupidly.
"Henry Downs," he said, and the guard shouted, "Downs!"
2 tiers up, you could hear them shouting, "Downs!"
"You got the Henry Downs," said Ronquiles.
They both laughed so that it actually seemed funny.
"Interview room," said Niall. "Got some lawyers in there, man. How about the cafeteria? We don't start in with lunch till 11. "Got to have an interview room, man. Bureau regs. Got to read the rules of the road in a one-on-one interview room."
Ordell had told him to say that. And he told Cor that was strictly crazy. Who'd believe that? Who'd believe there was a rule so dumb?
"Shit," said Ordell in reply. "Where you been?"
The Mexican guard shook his head, but he was smiling. They all liked Niall. He was easy. Ronquiles spoke to another uniform a few feet away.
"Go tell that PD down there we got to have that room, man. Tell her go by the cafeteria."
The PD came out with her briefcase in a minute. The guard went to explain, but she was cool. She was done anyway. The interview room was a little cinder block square with a folding table and those old-fashioned plastic bucket chairs. Graffitied gang signs on one of them had been scoured off with steel wool, leaving a spot where most of the color was gone from the plastic. A blast of overhead fluorescence interrupted the usual jailhouse gloom, and leaked into the hall through a narrow plate glass panel in the door meant to allow observation by patrolling guards. Bolt arrived in cuffs and leg irons, accompanied by two solemn correctional officers. Here in the jail, half the guards had something going with one gang or another, and they'd kid around a lot, especially with a top-rank saint like Bolt. Down-talk him or make jokes about the weather. But Bolt presented himself as above that. Hard case, in seg. There was a chain around his belt that attached the manacles and ankle irons. As the correctional officers closed the door, Bolt took a seat. Niall immediately wandered to the near corner, where he could not be seen from the viewing panel, and began speaking.
Now, I gotta give you this pre-probationary briefing thing, Henry, okay? I want you to understand the rules of the road once you get out of here. You've done 18 months here, DOC, jail time. You have another year's probation, okay?
Sly Bolt was a cousin of Hardcore's. He wore a beard and he was tremendous across the shoulders and belly. Somewhere, Niall had heard he had played good b-ball in school, but it was hard to believe looking at him now. He had the mass of a boulder and an ill-mannered glower.
Now, I know we've gone over this 3 times already, but you signed the form today. That's a contract, man, me and you. You keep this contract, you're on the street. You break it, you're not just back here, you're at the yard in a blink, okay? Are you listening, Henry?
As Niall spoke, he'd opened his belt. He stuck his hand under the elastic of his briefs and reached behind him and tore the line of tape off. He had shaved his ass. Bug had done it, actually, one morning about 3 weeks ago. God, they both thought that was funny. Fun, he thought, and reached back for the package. It was a rubber, tied off at the end so it was about 4 inches long. Core made jokes about white guys. Niall just reached back to the crack in his butt and drew the condom out and held it close to himself as he approached Bolt and dropped it on the table.
Now, I'm going through this one by one, okay? No guns. I don't care what you call it, GAT, strap, T9, any firearm, you're back inside.
In a single motion, Bolt had the rubber in his lap beneath the table, the chain that ran from his cuffs barely clinking on the tabletop. Niall kept talking. Once he had his trousers hitched, he stood with his back against the glass panel in the door. No leaving the state without court approval, he said. No felonies or misdemeanors. Bolt would go back in, even for DUI.
And no gang association, Niall said. I know they're your homies, but you see them, you better go the other way. I catch you out there with those guys, then it's back inside. No way around it. If you're straight, I'm straight. You understand?
Beneath the table, Bolt pumped his hands around the condom like it was a bat handle, gradually thinning and extending it. Then he suddenly reared his head back, lifted his chained hands, and dropped the rubber straight down his throat. Gone. Like stories June told about college dudes eating goldfish. Bolt, rarely happy, smiled as Niall spoke.
You understand me, Henry? Niall asked again. I don't want any BS about you didn't hear this part or that part. This is serious shit I'm talking here.
Mm-hmm, said Bolt, both hands on his stomach. His eyes were closed. He was concentrating to make sure he kept it down. If that balloon, that's what Ordell called the rubbers, the balloons, if that balloon broke in Bolt's gut, full of straight stuff, pure white, they couldn't get him to emergency fast enough. He'd be dead. He wouldn't call for a doctor, either. Bolt was top rank, bar none for this. He'd just smile. They all laughed about it.
Fuck, man. That'd be motherfucking kicking, man. That'd be a rush. Woo-wee.
Woo-wee, thought Niall. From inside his jumpsuit, Bolt took a wad of bills, loot he'd collected in here for the dope. Niall couldn't believe there was cash in here, but anything small enough to pass between hands, pills, razor blades, currency, made its way inside if it was useful. On a chair there was a blue plastic bag, the delivery sleeve from a local paper one of the guards must have been reading. Niall put the bills in there and just stuffed all of it down his trousers. No one searched him on the way out. He kept speaking the same way 10 more minutes, then stepped outside to let the COs know they could take Bolt back. He was led off with his ankle irons clanking. Bolt didn't bother with even a backward look at Niall. In his cell, he'd take a box of X-lax and wait. Niall dropped dope with somebody new each week. A few whispered, "You all right, man? You okay?" Niall represented to them by hand, "B-S-D, B-4-me." It was a quick code, sign language, concluding with his index finger jabbed like a dagger toward his heart. They were startled by that, a white guy down for this. "Fuck you doing?" their looks would say, and inevitably his head rang in a customary instant of shame. Question of his life. People always acted like he was strange. He wouldn't drive his car in the rain. That was one thing people thought was strange. Not that he wouldn't travel, but he thought the rain was bad for the finish. And he got all weird around strangers, not looking people in the eye. But lots of people were like that. Michael was the same. But around Cor, around Bug, it was different. "I got carried away," he wanted to explain to the saints who'd give him that look. "I just got carried away. I'm in love," he'd say. "I love being in love." He thought about Bug as he came back into the jail corridor. How this started, bringing shit into the jail, was strange. Edgar's fault, Niall would say, though how much could you fade that way? He'd fucked up, too. He had got himself in a bad place with Hardcore, straight off. Niall knew that. Ordell was powerful. Right from the giddy-up, Niall felt his strength, this vitality that reached through Cor, like the force of nature that drove through a plant from root to leaf. He almost said to Edgar half a dozen times, "This guy, Ordell, Hardcore, he reminds me of you." He wrote his reports about Cor each month, and somehow he started letting Hardcore tell him what to say. Sitting in Niall's cubicle down at probation in the central courthouse, Cor would whisper so his raspy voice would not carry beyond the rimpled plastic partitions. "What all you scribbling about me?" Cor would clown around, laughing, reaching for the sheet, and finally Niall let him turn it over, like what's the diff, no secrets here. Hardcore read, scratching his long, evil fingernails through his scraggly goatee. "Don't be saying that, man. Don't be going on about what a loose motherfucker I is. You'll be worrying about my gang banging." "No? What should I say?" "You know, bro. Be cool. Put down I got me a good job and shit."
"What job is that, man?"
"Community organizing."
He laughed because Niall had mentioned Edgar. Edgar was already in a heat. "This is an opportunity, Niall," he'd say. "This is a tremendous opportunity."
"Say I'm like doing that community organizing shit."
He had. Oh well. When Niall went out to the IV tower for the home visits, Ordell was always there to greet him, standing on the street, waving his arm around in huge, swooping gestures, making fun of somebody, probably both of them.
"Park right here. That's good, that's good."
He saved the best spot for blocks for Niall. Hardcore put on a good show. His artillery, his muscle men, were all stuffed in one black Lincoln half a block down. There was nobody around to wait on Hardcore, just a few neighborhood kids, shorties. He couldn't keep away, and this skinny little smooth-skinned girl, Lavinia, who carried messages.
"Go tell Bolt, done said get with it,"
Cor said to her one day.
"What's that about?" Niall asked.
"Oh,
that.
Hardcore laughed. His mouth was wide, and on one side he had several teeth crowned in gold. He never answered. He had the decency not to lie. Of course, each time Niall came, he saw more. The guns were out, the Tech-9s and AK-47s, the pagers, kids running and flying whenever Hardcore walked around.
You the man, Hardcore would tell Niall. You the man. You tell me when I'm busting on folks or something. You say, be done, man. I gon' quit. This here is just some business, man. Got to have some business.
You ought to listen to my father. You ought to talk to him, Niall said.
Why would he say that? Especially when most days, the last thing in the world he wanted to do himself was talk to Edgar. Kind of swap, Niall supposed. You talk to him, then I don't have to. Edgar always had projects for Niall. In college, when Niall was sort of cutting up, doing T's and blues a lot, and watching a shitload of MTV, Niall had his favorite job. He was a messenger. The whole shot, the whole thing, Niall loved it. He had the bike, the tights, the optic safety vests, the weak little styrofoam crash helmet. He went around ripped half the time, with his Walkman blasting, and a walkie-talkie on his waist turned up full volume. He couldn't really hear it, but it vibrated when Jack started yelling in dispatch. That job was the tits. What Niall liked best was the way you were in the scene and not. All these characters are ricocheting off the walls like, man, where's the messenger? Jesus, where's the messenger? And you bop in there, okay, here's the messenger, take a pill. Edgar hated that job. Niall could just tell Edgar was waiting him out. He was waiting for Niall to see the job was Frostbite City in the winter and Stroke City in July. What jacked Edgar was not so much that Niall was a flunky, but that he liked it. Maybe that was part of why it was a great job. Then, the second summer, Niall was getting fucking prickly heat between his legs from the bicycle seat, and he said something about how they ought to have a union, all the messengers. Edgar got very intense. He must have asked Niall 60 times if he talked to anybody else, until Niall spent hours wondering what kind of embolism he'd had to even say something like that out loud to Edgar. Niall quit the job soon after that. He went back to Kindle Community College. He took social work courses like Edgar was always saying. It was just easier that way. Now and then, Cor would go off to do his business. He'd put his hand on Niall's shoulder.
You cool, man. You okay? Back at ya.
Usually, he left Niall on one of those broken benches behind T4, the IV tower, facing a sealed-off portion called the Chute, C-H-U-T-E, or the Chute, S-H-O-O-T. Nobody ever spelled it, so you never knew. It was fenced on one side and bounded by the bricks of the IV tower on the other. This was the domain of the T4 rollers, Cor's set. They were all kicking here, wall-banging, drinking 8-ball, shooting dice. Niall sat and watched, with Cor's blessings. But it was as if he wasn't there, some white nothing, no more noticeable than the lid from a paper cup amid the trash moldering at the building sides. He saw shit, though. One afternoon, late, Gorgo, a long, raw-boned cavalryman, pulled his 86 Blazer with deep-dish tires right up on the walk, NWA blastin' through the open windows. Gorgo flew out, G-down, black T-shirt trailing, hard-leg jeans sagging. For reasons Niall could not understand, the saints around knew he'd been ripping.
Yo, Saint, sup? They all demanded.
Gorgo indulged a moment of macho bashfulness.
Ain't no thing.
But soon he was persuaded to share his exploits.
Just jack some lames for 10 large.
In you ride?
There were a lot of shorties, unborns, and tiny gangsters around now, listening, inquiring. They were incredulous that Gorgo had pulled the stick up in his own truck. It would make him identifiable, open to reprisal.
Yeah, fool, I ain't hiding from no goobers. Name is Gorgo.
Fat, these kids all said, but they were flying in a minute. Two goobers rolled down in different cars, shooting between the buildings from the avenue 100 yards away. For an instant, as the birds rose, as the kids shouted, "Incoming!" and "Dustin!" and dashed for cover, Niall was by himself on the bench, stumped by the resonating sound, which in the open air was somewhat less dramatic than he would have imagined. Eventually, he heard Gorgo screaming, "Get yourself down!" War, he thought, huddled behind the bench. Insane, he thought. The gunfire lasted only a few minutes. From high above, up in T4, he heard the answering shots as the cars out on Grace Street roared off.
Ain't gonna light up no one from so far, punk asses!
Gesturing in defiance at the departing cars, Gorgo strode back and forth across the bench in splendid white high tops with fancy laces. He was thumping his chest, rallying his fist, screaming. His satin jacket flew around him, and a solid gold .45, 4 inches across with a diamond in the barrel, swung from his neck. On the bench, one corner was newly splintered by gunfire. He looked below to explain to Niall,
"They all just trippin'. Now they gon' tell their homes how they ripped the sissies. But I got all their loot."
Gorgo reached into a bulging pocket and pulled out the bills which he had taken at gunpoint from the gangster outlaws. His smile disclosed that he was missing a front tooth.
"It's on now,"
he said, meaning there would be shooting for weeks afterwards, which there was. Gorgo was 16, 17 by Niall's estimate, and crazy. His Tech 9 had come from somewhere, and he wore it upside down, slung from the shoulder, like a soldier in a war flick. They said he would kill anyone. The crazy life. That's what they called it, the bangers. The crazy life. Niall loved it. These kids were extreme. War, Niall thought for days afterwards. When he was little, a shorty whizzing in his bed every night, war was what terrified him. There was a war out there which he somehow envisioned. Artillery fire and the smoke of bombs, the percussive flashes of light and magnesium flares, the sick odors of smoke trailing on the air. War would take him, break his tiny body. War could not be held at bay, could not be kept outside the door. Edgar wanted war, and Niall was terrified. And now here, amid the guns, these brave warriors, Niall was thinking, yeah, he was thinking, cool. It was way weird, but still, so cool for Gorgo to be standing there pounding his chest, like, "I don't care, live or die, I don't care, I'm here, screaming." Nothing made any more sense than that. No future. That's what Gorgo was screaming. No to the future. For him, it did not even exist. Cool, Niall thought for days. Cool. After Niall nearly got snuffed that day, Hardcore had Lavinia look after him when Core went off to do his stuff. She was like Hardcore's secretary, is what you'd say, carrying messages, keeping things straight. She was just so cute and shy. Niall always talked to her, tried at least. At first, he could barely get her to say her name. She had one of those do's, a lot of straighteners and stuff, the front plastered out into bangs that looked like sheet metal, and the back formed into a high roll with a little white bow. They'd sit there on one of those broken benches in front of the IV tower, like two frogs on a stone. Not a damn thing to say. This was one of the things in life Niall was purely worst at, making conversation. With girls, he was a lost cause, but even on the job, he was like constipated. Some POs were pretty good with clients. 99% of these kids didn't want to tell you shit to start. afraid you'd jam them with it later, knowing they couldn't make themselves sound right anyway. With Niall, they all sat there, chewing gum or looking at their fingers, slouched over in the chair, sort of tip-tapping their Nikes and hoping to figure out what little they had to do to get it over with. Niall kept the radio on just so the silence wasn't so bad. He'd read questions off the form. Health, school, have you looked for work? Talk sports, ask them about the traps, the hands, ask them about songs on the radio. There was all kinds of advice, none of it did Niall much good. With Bug, he was stuck with the dumb and obvious.
School? He asked. You go to school?
Mm-mm, not hardly. I don't diss my teachers none. Some fool be cracking up, I turn round and tell him, shut your mouth, punk! We all learning something here. But you know, I get tired with it, man. 'Cause they all the time just trying to turn me out, on account they're all them goobers round.
He didn't understand what Bug meant.
You know, they in my face, man, about how I can't bring no strap with me to school.
A gun, she meant.
Now I don't have no weight, how I gon' get one block from that school without my ass gon' be smoked? All them goobers waiting for me, on account of my big brother Clyde.
Clyde around, he BSD?
Top rank BSD,
she said.
He's slamming. He on vacation.
The yard?
Doing 20 to 40. Some damn goobers come right up here, representing and carrying on. Right here, be standing 20 feet from where you be. Shit. Clyde popped their ass. I begged him when I saw him taking off with that gat, say, what you doing, fool? This goober's dusted, man. He flying on some shit. He say, leave me be, girl. I can't let this sucker do that shit right here in my house. True saint, man. He don't bar none. So what can I say? I go down there see him lots. Ride time on them weekends. All us G-girls going. He doing okay, seem like. But I sure miss him. He out in 2007, man. Make me cry. He talk about 2007 like it be tomorrow. Anyway, that's how come them goobers be looking for me.
He didn't even bother with the obvious. Get out of BSD. They all said the same thing.
BSD, man? That's me, man.
And Niall understood. This gang thing, people didn't get it. White people, grown-ups, however you'd say. But like Bug, man, he could see she needed BSD. It was food to the hungry, someone to look at her and say, you cool. All the time, you cool. We be for you, girl, home girl. You be silly, you be crazy, girl. We be for you.
People didn't see that. They said gang and like freaked. Gats and blood, dope. Holy shit.
But it was like sweet at the center. Like candy. Niall didn't know when he started in thinking about Bug. It was sort of an accident, almost. He talked about her at work. She was on a juvie probation. Niall knew the guardian's P.O., Mary Lair. Bug had gotten busted selling. Cop named Lubitsch pinched her and then didn't come down on her because she wasn't really a case. Juvie pro. That was like nothing. One day, they were there on the benches, and Bug was telling him about her father. He'd spotted her on Lawrence yesterday, and took her down to Betty's Byright, bought a ribbon for her hair. He always did like that, Bug said, getting her things.
Who all Edgar, anyway, man?
She asked then.
That you, Daddy? You raving about Edgar all the time.
Bullshit. I do not talk about him all the time.
She answered. Who was Edgar?
God, man, that was another question Niall could never answer.
Yeah, he's my father, Niall said eventually.
He's somebody big time?
He's big time. He's sort of a politician, you'd say. He was a preacher to start. preacher. He was trained that way. He never preached. My auntie, she a preacher.
Really?
Uh-huh. Over there at Evangelical Baptist. Sister Sarita, you done heard of her?
Maybe.
Yeah, lots of folks heard her, man.
She powerful. Powerful. She stopped preaching and screech. Whew!
Said Lavinia and shook her head. She, you know, all the time want me to come down to that church, keep me off these mean streets, keep me from slamming and jamming. Back in the days when I was little and shit, you know, I singed in the choir, man.
She closed her eyes momentarily and felt the power of song. Sometimes Niall wondered about religion. He liked churches, Catholic churches especially, with their mysterious, dark murals, the Virgin Mary with that humble, innocent look, a little like Lavinia's, too shy and holy to even look all these grungy mortals in the eye, or else the incredible gore that was on the walls of these places, Jesus getting nailed, or Saint Sebastian with more arrows in him than a porcupine had quills, or some of these horrifying panels of John the Baptist with his head on the plate and his tongue gorking out. But here was the point. People worshipped that. It filled them with some great sense of spirit. His father, Niall knew, was into all this stuff. June wouldn't hear of it. To her it was a bunch of stories, important stories, stories she loved to hear told, but stories. What people wished was so, not what was. Religion was some big part of what didn't click in the end between Edgar and June. When they'd gone freedom riding, she'd like decided that God, faith, Bible thumping, it was all just a piece of that whole corn-pone tradition that had its foot on the throat of everybody underneath. She just quit on it, and sort of made Edgar choose almost between God and her. Niall wondered sometimes if his life would have been different if he really was a preacher's kid, instead of the son of whatever it was Edgar thought he might be. There was a thought and a half. What Edgar was. When Hardcore met Edgar, Core was trippin'. He had heard he was a senator, and he asked questions about Washington.
You flyed in for this here meet? Where all in D.C. you hang, man? I got kin there.
Niall told him as they were about to get into the limousine with T-Rock.
You know, he's not that kind of senator.
You mean he ain't elected and shit?
He's elected, but he's a state senator. There are two different kinds of senators, man.
Yeah, said Hardcore. Then, after a moment, added, But don't be saying nothing to T-Rock.
Edgar talked that day. He was hot-wired. He was so fucking goggle-eyed excited with himself, waving his lean hands around. Niall thought the windows were going to pop out of the car. Edgar loved these guys. Hardcore and T-Rock, they were like his poster children or something. Sitting there, shrunk back into the corner of the seat, amid the walnut paneling, the crystal liquor decanters, the velvety leather, Niall thought again that there was some fury in Edgar he would never understand. This was a scene and a half. T-Rock, Core, Niall, Edgar in back, and two artillerymen in the front seat, one of them rank. Just an unbelievable, unbathed, hard sweat odor hanging on him. Edgar talked. The future, he kept saying. The future. Here is the future. I see the future. They didn't want to hear it.
Brother Canelman,
T-Rock kept saying.
We here kind of seeing about arrangements. Something maybe we can be doing. Edgar had said, "You think I want money? No, it's not like that. Money, if anything, you'll get money." T-Rock sat forward then. He was a very stylized character. He wore a full beard, a derby, a silk vest with dice and roulette wheels on it, and impenetrably dark glasses. Murder Ones, they called them. Kor laughed at him behind his back, but not to his face. T-Rock was one of those guys, dude who knew every bad thing and had it all swimming in him, like some septic pool, could grab hold of the meanest piece of himself any time he needed it. And smart, too. Look you in the eye and suck your brains out. He was short, with thick legs that strained the seams of his black trousers, and a slight Bimini accent. He hiked himself forward on the ribbed black leather seats of the limousine. He figured Edgar for a psych now. Money? How we all gettin' motherfuckin' money from this man? So Edgar slid into it. It could be arranged. This was what politics really was about. "Well, you get him that motherfucking money, we see about that," said T-Rock and waved them out. Kor was in Niall's shit then, all the time. "That all was just bogus. That motherfucker was just playing us, man." Niall couldn't say anything, but no, he didn't think so. "I ain't down for that. I'd go head up any motherfucker, man, play me like that, daddy or no. I'd cap that mother soon as look at him. T-Rock, man. T-Rock rip all on me. Lame motherfuck. They wasn't shit he ain't call me." Kor was deep. What could he say? Edgar would do it. That was the truth. Edgar loved this kind of shit. He loved to move the system, make the walls come down. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, no more, Edgar told him he had the money coming, and Niall told Kor. And then June was on the phone 3 nights in a row. Niall could tell it was about Michael. There was always a certain tone Edgar took on, like he'd gotten some icy fluorocarbon up the hiney. Like, "Hold tight, team, I am in charge, comrade general of the revolution, ready to die for the cause." After the third night, Edgar, who was on the way to the state capital, handed Niall the check from the DFU and told him to cash it and send the money to Michael, overnight mail. "Michael?" Niall had asked. Were other people raised like this, with secrets? Not like Aunt Nellie nips the strawberry wine or Uncle Herman has the hots for the summer girl, but fucking secrets. Like, don't tell. Like, if you tell, the black hole of Calcutta will open. We'll fall in. We'll die. We'll fucking worse than die. That's how Niall was raised. When he was 7 or 8, when they moved to Wisconsin, June had taken him by both arms, gripping him hard enough to hurt. "Listen to me," she said for the 3rd or 4th time. "Listen. You may never tell anyone about Michael, Niall. Do you hear? Never. This is important, Niall. This is critical. You should never say that you knew him before. If anyone makes a mistake, if you do, or I do, if Michael does, if Edgar does, we will all be apart for a long time. Do you understand? This is important." That was how he grew up. Jesus.
"He's in some trouble, Niall," Edgar said.
"What do I tell Kor?"
"We'll take care of Kor. We'll take care of everybody. It's just a matter of time."
Edgar was in that mood, the democracy of problems, each one solved as well as it could be in 5 minutes, and then put on hold. The legislative session was drawing to a close, and Edgar was on the phone all night. The fax machine upstairs was curling out paper in what seemed to be a single message. Every time Niall answered the phone, it was somebody else, asking urgently for Edgar. Constituents, legislators from around the state, reporters, downstate staffers. Edgar took each call and allowed himself an instant of reflection before making a terse response. "We'll take care of it," he said again, and left with his small overnight bag. One day, Bug and he were doing what they usually did, just hanging on the benches by the ivy tower.
"Don't be listening to him, man," she said quietly. "He sell you out."
"Hardcore?
Dude gonna sell you out."
Niall shrugged. He already knew that, he supposed, was afraid of it, at least, but it felt bad to have some skinny little girl say so.
"I don't think so, man." "Uh-huh, I seed him, man. He's cool."
"Okay." She did that girl thing, flapped a loose wrist, and started to walk away. Niall followed her.
"Don't pay no mind to me, man. No man got to listen to no bitch."
"I didn't say that, man. Did I say that?"
"Girl can see what you thinking too easy, man."
She turned, her huge eyes full of the world.
"I's just trying to help you, man."
"I know." She stepped back his way.
"Don't say nothing to him, man. Hurt me bad."
"No," he said. It was all too late by then, anyway. By then, Niall had started thinking about her. She was 15. Sometimes he'd hit on that number. He'd think, whoa. He'd shake his finger at himself. 15. Cradle robber, he'd think. Jailbait. It didn't really matter, though. He was swept. It was in his head, like it always was. Captain Sex in the head. Even when he got with a girl, that was where it was, mostly. Not that he was like a virgin or anything. Niall had fucked 4 girls. He remembered their names and everything about it. Before Bug, he would count them up each day, as if there might be a surprise. He thought about each time at least once a day, except for one girl, Lana Ramirez. That was a total thing for Niall. It had gone on months, and he could only remember the sort of general idea of being with her. She was a big girl, red-headed. She worked in the place where Niall was a messenger. They'd have a few pops after work. She had her own place. They would fuck. That was love for Niall. That was definitely total love. She moved to Miami. He wrote her and tried calling once or twice. But what the fuck? He'd wonder, how'd she get away from me? It seemed impossible. He'd been her slave. Slave. Sometimes, in the middle of the night, when everybody gets weird thoughts, Niall would think, Edgar doesn't. Like that, that clear, man. Edgar doesn't. Whoever told Niall that? Well, who had to? He'd been around the guy for nearly 20 years now, and so far as Niall knew, Edgar had never been interested. Not girls, not boys, not mountain goats. The guy was like immune. Well, that was Edgar's problem, not his. His problem was the money. Hardcore would never let up about it. It was like this circle. Niall would explain what Edgar had explained to him. First, BSD gets a political organization going, a legitimate presence. Then they have a voice. Then Edgar can help them be heard. On Can-El. So it always came back to the money.
"Where that fucking loot, Jack?"
In Core's head, it was like a job he'd do when he got 10 large. You couldn't tell him the money wasn't for him, it was for organizing. Because he already had the organization. He could snap his fingers tomorrow and say, "Yeah, you all better do this registering to vote thing." But until they saw the money, they weren't going to start. Core was always giving face. No let-up. If Niall said he'd make changes in a report for Core or some other saint, if he said he'd talk to somebody about a pending beef, Core would give him a big humph and say, "Same as you gon' get us money." So one day Niall, he was crazy, he knew he was crazy, but one day Niall said, "It's going to take a while for the money because we had to spend it on something else. So why don't you do this other part, you know, you and T-Rock, work on this voter thing. There's an election in the fall, Then you'll be started. You'll be going good. And I'm sure the money will come through. Kaur just stared. That look, his street cred, which boasted he was a stone killer.
No, said Hardcore. He said, no,
many times.
You spent my money. Now, isn't that something? You spent my money. Ain't nobody spend my money but me.
Niall tried to reason with him. It wasn't his money. It was political money. It was walking around money. It was for political organizing. And Kaur hadn't organized, and Edgar hadn't given him the money. But Kaur was like a tracking dog, or a mosquito, or a shark. Something that smelled blood.
Where all hell my money going to?
He must have asked that 70 times.
Ordell, you want the money, I'll get the money back.
This was maybe the most ridiculous thing Niall Edgar had said in his entire life, and Hardcore knew it, like he knew everything else.
Damn motherfucking right you get my loot back. Get out my face, man. Just stop coming round here till you got me that money in, you dogs. Gonna get me a new P.O. I ain't down for no more this friendly shit. Like you some homie. You ain't no homie. Get you ass far away, motherfucker, for I do something I ain't s'pose.
So where was that going? When Niall came back a few days later, Kaur ripped him up again.
What you doing here? No money in you hand. Told you go.
I don't want to go.